What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Welcome to the Divorce Survival Guide podcast, where we have open and honest conversations about co-parenting, separation, divorce, and the hardest question of all, should you stay or should you go? I'm Kate Anthony, your Divorce Survival Guide, and I'm here to help you navigate some of the roughest waters you've ever swum in and answer some of your toughest questions. I've been to hell and back. And now it's my mission in life to help you get to the other side of this process with your sanity and your heart intact.
Hey everyone, how's it going? We are moving deeper and deeper into the holiday season, and we're not going to talk about that today though. Today, I have my good friend Lindsay Ellison back with me. You know her as the author of Magic Words, How to Get What You Want from a Narcissist. But she's got a new book out, and it's really cool. And there's a lot of personal stuff in this episode from both Lindsay and myself. We share some unique experiences and talk about them quite openly. But before we get to that, I want to let you know a couple of things. The first is that starting in January, I have a few open slots for private coaching. I have a whole slew of clients that are kind of completing this month. So I've got a few open slots for private work. That is getting on the phone with me every week. And, you know, I customize my plan. That's really how I work with private clients, is that it is completely customized to what you're going through, where you're at, and helping you move towards the goals that you identify. So if whether you are trying to decide whether to stay or go, if that is your goal, we will get you there. If you are at the beginning stages of divorce and you need help getting through it, we will absolutely get you through it. Better informed and stronger and increased amounts of clarity and confidence and all of that. And if you're already going through the divorce and you're restarting, I got you there too. Go to my website, which is kateanthony.com. Click on the dropdown that says private coaching, and you can read all about it. It's a very detailed page that will give you all the information you need. Everyone who comes to me for private coaching also gets access to both of my online programs, Should I Stay or Should I Go, and the Divorce Survival Program. So it's a really great way to do this. I mean, it's sort of the optimal way to go through. And if you're trying to think like, why should I pay a divorce coach as well as an attorney and as well as a, you know, maybe a therapist, blah, blah, blah. My clients who work with me privately probably spend a lot less on their divorces, on their attorneys. And, you know, that's nothing against attorneys, because attorneys love their clients who work with me because they have the appropriate team in place. I get on the phone with attorneys all the time. I get on the phone with your therapist as well. So this is a fully functioning team effort, and I highly recommend that if you are really sort of gunning for needing some one-on-one guidance as you go through any of this, I hope you will consider me. I mean, if you're listening to my podcast, right, you may as well. Let's get on the phone. Let's do this. All right. So I said there were a couple of things. Really, there was just one thing. That was it. All right. So Lindsay, I'm going to circle back to Lindsay. So Lindsay is a breakup to breakthrough coach. She is an author, a podcaster, and she is here to talk to us about her latest book, Blessings of a Breakup. Get it? Blessing. It's a blessing and it's a lesson. Lindsay is also one of my favorite people. She's a dear friend. And this episode I loved having this conversation with Lindsay. It was really healing and beautiful. And so I really hope that it is for you as well. And I hope that y'all head on over to Lindsay's website and pick up her new book, Blessings of a Breakup. And without further ado, here is my conversation with Lindsay Ellison. Welcome back to the podcast, Lindsay Ellison, one of my favorite people.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
Yes. So happy to have you. So, all right. So we're going to start with, there was a personal moment where a bunch of us were like, where's Lindsay? Is that okay to talk about?
That's perfect. It's a great set. This is a great set. Yeah. This was last year.
Last year, there was a moment where all of us realized, Susan Guthrie, Gabrielle Hartley, it was like a group of us, and we were like, where the hell is Lindsay? And we were texting each other. We're like, have you heard from her? We don't know where she is. What is going on? She's not responding to emails. She's not, her texts are going to green. Where the hell was Lindsay? Where the hell was Lindsay?
Wow. That was a great intro, Kate. yeah. So last year of 2020, amazing year for all of us, that was sarcasm, we had this thing called a pandemic.
Did we?
If you remember.
So weird. That's gone now though, right? It's over?
Right. It's completely over.
Yeah.
But prior to that, so I'd say leading into 2019 or kind of 2019, I've been on your podcast before. I don't remember how much people know me, but just those who don't, I've been into coaching. I've done divorcing, but I've been really more of a breakup coach, you know, expert in narcissism, et cetera.
You guys know Lindsay from her book that we always recommend, Magic Words, How to Get What You Want from a Narcissist. So y'all know who Lindsay is.
Yes. Thank you. So I have been coaching for 9 years and pretty happily married for the very first, you know, good chunk of the 9 years. And I started my business when he and I were first early married. So I really felt as though my business and my image and everything on Instagram was attached to my happy life.
Yes.
Say.
And this is your second marriage, right? This man was not the father of your kids. Right.
Yeah, not the narcissist, still not a narcissist. Mm-hmm. And he was the healthiest relationship I've ever had because I was in a relationship with a narcissist for 17 years. So I really touted like, oh God, you know, don't give up a marriage. You could always work. And so, but then things started to not be so good anymore. And a lot of it had to do with his personal journey that had nothing to do with me and things going on in his personal life that I will never share with the public. And then what it did for me is watching my partner struggle kicked in the old codependent ways of coping into wanting to fix someone and to bear their pain and to carry their pain and to making sure, and the fear of losing him and the fear of watching his life pretty much fall apart. It had nothing to do with me. It's just professionally scared me so much because I didn't want to be abandoned. So those old triggers, right? The old trauma triggers. And what that frightening aspect of that within him made me go into denial. And I was so afraid that not only would I be abandoned, but my biggest thing is, what if people find out? What if people find out that Lindsay really isn't great? She's been saying all this stuff. So I had this huge imposter, fraudulent fear that if people found out. So in my mind, my distorted thoughts were, if my marriage breaks up, I'm going to lose my business. That's the way I, you know, and that's the only thing I had that kept me going. If I have to have a job, if we're separating, right?
Right.
So that was happening. And then the pandemic hit. And then that was like the cherry on top, the straw, the boat, the camel's back. And having my kids home and watching them struggle. And my son was a senior in high school. He wasn't getting his senior year. There was stuff going on with their dad you know, him losing his father. So I had the kids home quite a bit. My now husband, he lost his job. So he's unraveling. The world was unraveling. So not only in my home, but externally, you know, COVID, right? Yeah, and just everything.
Right.
So I managed and managed and managed until my husband and I just decided we had to split. He had to go away for a bit. We weren't sure if we were going to get back together. And it was him leaving that actually made me lose it. And I had a complete emotional breakdown to the point where I wanted to take my life. Mm-hmm. I hadn't gotten that far yet, but I was really starting to think that life would be so much better without me in it. Mm-hmm. And I just needed to get, and I honestly didn't know what was happening to me. And then I started like, maybe I'm bipolar, maybe I'm crazy. And as I was having this breakdown, it was happening slowly. I couldn't take on clients. So all I did was sit outside and stared out at my yard for hours. And then I was starting mm-hmm. to drink a lot of wine. Mm-hmm. My stepmom caught on to it. And long story short, she heard me speaking suicidally. And the next day I was on a plane. So it was mm-hmm. one of those things of, Lindsay, you don't really have a choice. But I was in such a wreck and such a state of sadness that I didn't care whether I went away or not. So I went to this place in Arizona called The Meadows, and it's a 6-week program. They have other programs, but I took the 6-week inpatient, and it's really a kind of one of the best places for dealing with childhood trauma. And I recognized that what was happening to me is I was going through such a triggered trauma response of being left and abandoned. It was very similar to what happened to me as a kid. And so I learned about, I was experiencing what's called relational death. Mm-hmm. So the death of a relationship was actually spiraling me into wanting to die. By the way, this is what I learned about love addiction.
You guys, warmer, sunnier days are calling, and you're going to want to fuel up for them with Factor's no prep, no mess meals. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are dietitian approved, and they're ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So no matter how busy you are, you're always going to have time to enjoy nutritious, great tasting meals. And I know that's really important to you guys right now. You're going through a hard time. You're in emotional upheaval, maybe some chaos, really good, healthy, nutritious meals in 2 minutes. And I'm telling you, they're so good. You've got 35 different meals and more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week. And you'll always have new flavors to explore. Treat yourself to restaurant quality meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, blackened salmon. Ugh, so good, you guys. So head to factormeals.com/DSG50 and use code DSG50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month. So the code is DSG50 at factormeals.com/DSG50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active. Hey, are any of you guys going through menopause or perimenopause? Ugh, you know how you can't find any comfort in your body? Or even if you're done, if you're on the other side like I am, but you still kind of feel like a wet sock on a busy highway? You've got to try Hormone Harmony. So Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. So here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body, wait for it, adapt to any stressors like chaotic hormone changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. So it's not just for menopause. Any woman with symptoms of any hormonal imbalance can take it, but it's perfect for those horrible menopausal and perimenopausal symptoms that put a woman's life on hold. Hot flashes and night sweats, racing thoughts and low moods, poor sleep and feeling tired all the time, occasional bloating and gas. Yeah, Hormone Harmony can help with all of those things. And the biggest benefit, feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over and over again in their reviews. And there are over 17,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. So for a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code DSG at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code DSG for 15% off today.
Being in at the Meadows, I had learned that I was in a co-addicted relationship where my husband was going through his stuff and I couldn't let him work it out. I had to work it out for him. Yeah. And the more I would work it out for him, the more he would depend on me to do it. And then he would never do the things that I was working out for him. And then, you know, hence the codependent, co-addicted relationship. And I had to unravel as to why I felt it necessary to be stuck in that. So long story short, I came home from that. And when I got home, I was on the path of getting healthy. And the way I can best describe it is leaving him for 6 weeks and then coming back to that is like an alcoholic after 6 weeks going to rehab, walking into a bar.
Yeah, right. You can't, right. You can't go back to the same relationship dynamic. Like,
right.
Whether no, it's like good or bad, right? Like there's no good or bad. It's just, it's a dynamic that you can't just walk back into.
Yes. And what I had done is 6 weeks, 7 days a week, 20 hours a day felt like working on myself and getting very clear.
Yep.
And so the reason why you couldn't, I should footnote, is that the reason why I couldn't get in touch with me is A, I didn't tell anyone that I walked off the face of the earth because of shame.
She literally disappeared, y'all.
Yeah.
We were worried.
My best friends, no one knew except for my kids and their dad. And that's
right.
It.
Right.
And my parents, of course. And I didn't care. And so they take away your phone. You don't have access to your computer, nothing. And then 2 weeks in, I was, I'm like, I really got to let people know that I'm not dead. I mean, my neighbors thought that like my husband, like buried me in the backyard. They were like, where's Lindsay? Like because they were so used to seeing me outside.
Sure. So, staring into the void.
It made you feel really loved.
She became the void, y'all. She became the void.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah. I ended up just coming home and recognizing that, and this is what happens, and I always like to apply my story to what your listeners might be going through, is when we leave a relationship and we try to go back into it, and we're getting triggered, what he was still working on that hasn't really been resolved, it was triggering me to want to help him. Right. And I learned that I had to have the boundaries around it. So we ultimately ended up splitting for good. And it was like a breakup I've never had before, where I broke up with someone I really loved.
Yeah.
Never had that. You know, all my breakups are like, fuck you, I'm done. Right. There was not really, it really wasn't that. Mm-hmm. And it was this mutual understanding and self-love for both of us and him and I did not, and I was unprepared by the pain of that. I did not think it would be that hard.
Right.
Because you go through significant withdrawal when you break up with someone that's not good for you. And if you still like them. And I knew this was happening, right? Because I at least had all the training at this point. And so from like, you know, really it was like last year from like November through February, I was just in a deep state of grief.
Yeah.
It was so painful. And the withdrawal was so strong that I was negotiating with myself of how can I get back together with him?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't that bad. Right. And then through all of that, I ended up having to turn to God of some higher power to get me through this, because I recognize that in love addiction or any toxic relationship, we make our partners our higher power.
Mm-hmm,
we lose sight of ourselves.
Right.
Just like alcoholics make alcohol their higher power.
Right. So I want to talk about love addiction and what you're saying about love addiction, because people are like, love addiction. Well, is that a thing? Is that like, what? Come on. So I want to break down what you've discovered about the science of it, right? What's happening in your brain, the brain chemicals, the trauma, like all of that. Like, what is it? What is love addiction?
Yes. Oh, I love that you asked that, because I think it's something that most people struggle with and they don't know that it's called love addiction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Typically, if you are a love addict, you are in love with what's called a love avoidant. So I'm going to actually have to talk about both in order for them to understand. So yeah. They really work together. Mm-hmm. So a love addict is someone who, it's a lot of codependence, right? Where we end up falling for someone or liking someone who is not that available, whether it's emotionally available, physically available, emotionally intelligent. And so those people that we fall in love with are called love avoidance. I like to, people ask me this question and so I'm going to answer it, say, oh, are narcissists love avoidance? They can be, but narcissists can also be severe love addicts. Right. So this really, the love addict, love avoidant, there's no, I really try to take the words codependent, narcissist out of it because there's more nuance to that. So, but a love addict typically has experienced some kind of trauma or abandonment growing up. And so for me, my dad was an absolute love avoidant and to this day still is. Mm-hmm. And he was emotionally unavailable, very emotionally wounded. My mother died when I was 6 in a very tragic car accident. So they were very young. And I think my dad never came out of that grief. And I always would say that when my mom died, I think a part of him went with her.
Yeah.
So here I was, a little girl needing a nurturing parent, and he wasn't one. So that was pretty much, I'd say, the origins or the beginning of kind of a codependent, of not having my needs met and taking care of someone else's. And I really did take care of my father way more than I took care of myself and more than he took care of me. The love addict is the greatest fear. A love addict's greatest fear is abandonment.
Mm-hmm. Right.
With an underlying fear of intimacy. And intimacy is not something that's sexual. Intimacy is about having an emotional connection that's healthy. Okay. Mm-hmm. So at the
right.
Meadows,
yes. Right.
At the Meadows, they use the word intimacy as into me you see. So mm-hmm. that's the way they define it. So mm-hmm. are you allowing to let, you know, and typically a love addict is too afraid of that because they're afraid of getting abandoned. So they'll, instead of being intimate and allowing you someone in, we'll end up tending to a love avoidant. That's how we get intimacy, is tending to someone else's need and worrying about them. So a cycle of a love addict would be, they get into a relationship. Love addicts are really good at fantasizing, right? Mm-hmm. Not sexually fantasizing. That's not what I mean. But fantasizing that this guy is the greatest guy in the world. Right. So love addicts are typically, they have lost the ability to have reality and understand the reality, because that typically also comes from childhood, because children cope through fantasy.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And pretending that everything's fine. So if that has not been treated or it's been unresolved, as the love addict gets into, you know, an adult life, they will find every way. So love addicts love narcissists and toxic people, because narcissists tend to what? They're really, really good at creating a fantasy of the relationship early on. Right.
Right. Yes. And they love to be fawned over.
Yes, exactly.
Right? So it's like, it's a perfect receptacle for our fawning and our caretaking and blah, blah, blah. Right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So then she is responsive to the avoidance seductiveness and enters the relationship in a haze of fantasy, denies partners walls and importance of life outside a relationship. So whatever the walls are going on with their partner, their love avoidant, whether they get into, you know, whether it's work or they actually have another relationship going on, whatever that thing is, a love addict will then realize what's going on and experiences an event that shatters the denial that we've been having about the relationship. And then what we do is we go into emotional withdrawal from that fantasy, and we go into having pain, anger, fear, shame, rage, panic. And then what happens is we start to become the love avoidant.
So the
fantasy is broken. We can't believe this is happening. And then we go into this mode where we retreat. And those moments when we retreat is we become the love avoidant. And then the love avoidant becomes the love addict.
Yeah.
Right. So they're trying to come after us.
Yes. So this is the love bombing cycle, mm-hmm. right? This is,
and I want you back. I promise to be better. I'll go to therapy. If I can't lose you, etc. right? And so then the relationship will then create some kind of equilibrium for a while and everything will be normal. And the love addict then gets a high off of this normalcy and will start to obsess and eventually start to really get back into the relationship. Everything's great. And then the love avoidant is like, whoa, 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 this is way too much. And then the love avoidant will retreat and the same cycle will happen. And somewhere along the lines that that started happening to me and my partner for like 4 years before we split. And it just became more and more toxic. So to say what a love avoidant, you're going to see something that's interesting. So I just said a love addict, their greatest fear is that of abandonment with an underlying fear of intimacy. A love avoidant, their greatest fear is that of intimacy with an underlying fear of abandonment.
Yeah.
It's kind of mind blowing, right?
It's like the perfect, all the pieces just kind of fit perfectly together in this toxic, like,
it's a perfect
match. And yet also like the worst, right?
Yeah. And so they end up becoming overwhelmed by the partner's neediness of the partner or just things that they're asking them to do, and moves from what they call the wall of seduction to the wall of anger or resentment. And then they pull away and then would abandon the relationship in some way and creates distance from their partner. Then they created some kind of intensity outside the relationship. And again, it does not mean they're having an affair, but they'll really get into work, or they'll start to book up their travel a lot, or they'll buy a sailboat or something where there's,
Will have an affair
will have an affair.
Right. Yeah. it could be. Yeah.
I just want to say that, you know, the reason why I said that is because a lot of the love avoidants don't have affairs. They just might have an affair with working out.
Yeah. Right. Right. There's the intensity is indulged in a different place.
Yeah. And so I'll read to you kind of what the thought pattern is of a love avoidant and then the thought pattern of a love addict. So a love avoidant is, my sense of value comes from taking care of needy people. My job relationally is to take care of needy people. If I don't, I feel guilty. But to be relational and intimate is to suffocate and to die. So the minute a love avoidant, they're afraid of having intimacy, but if they don't, they're afraid of being left. So they just do it out of obligation, and it's very smothering, and they feel resentful of it. So love avoidants typically have a childhood trauma of enmeshment, having to take care of a mother or father too early on in life. And so they get afraid of having to be so burdened by someone's needs, but that's all they know.
Yeah.
Where a love addict's trauma is more of, I'm worthless in a relationship to my partner. I need to be taken care of, as I can't survive alone. And if I don't get close enough relationally, I'll die.
But interestingly, like, I can see the cycle and how like personally I cycle through both, right? Because 100%. that's the like infinity loop here, right? Yeah. Where you're the addict, and then the relationship shifts and you become the avoidant, and then right. And like, I can totally see that. I can see myself in both of those.
Well, it's funny because right before we hit record, I was talking to you about how I just started dating someone now. So just took a few months, and he's healthy. Mm. He's stable. Mm-hmm. He's consistently nurturing.
Weird.
And right. And I am the love avoidant in this relationship.
And you have no idea what the fuck to do with that.
Yeah. And so in the beginning, I found myself like sabotaging and pulling away.
And being, quote, bored, right? Were you bored?
Bored. Yep. Getting bored. There's nothing to chase here.
Right.
Right. Right. I don't get a high, because the high, a love addict's high, we like when the guy pulls away, so that when they do come back, we get a high. Uh-huh. But this guy is so consistent that I started to think that he was like, I literally interpreted he's getting clingy. He's needy. He's not, because I have had boundaries and he's like, oh yeah, if you need more time, like that's fine. Right. He's very secure with himself. And that's when I realized, oh shit, now I'm the love avoidant. God damn it. So then I was like, why is this? And that's what I was saying. I actually had to go back into therapy to understand, again, this is all trauma, because what happened is as a child, I never got nurturing or love from my father at all, other than my financial needs met, my education, and like food on the table.
Right.
So when a guy is really healthy, I almost don't feel subconsciously worthy of it. And it scares the shit out of me.
Right. And you also don't equate it with love because you have a mapping.
Yeah.
Right. You've got brain mapping that is, that equates quote love with the avoidance that your dad met you with. Right. Exactly. So it doesn't, you don't equate it as love. You're like, what is this?
Yeah.
Right.
And here's the thing that I like, if you were to tell me a year ago that I was going to be on a podcast with you a year later talking about this, I would have been like, there's no way in hell I would ever want anyone to know it.
Right.
But now that I went through quote treatment, and I really do see now codependency as an addiction. We have a thinking problem.
Yeah.
It has to be managed. It never, that's why you always say an alcoholic could be sober for 25 years, but they'll still say they're a recovering alcoholic.
Yeah. Right.
Because they know it has to be managed. And so that's what ended up allowing me to be more open about it, because I have learned the tools, which I now pass on to my clients, and my clients know, oh my God, you know, tell me how to get out of these triggering moments. How can I find? And I know I found this guy because this healthy person, because I did the work.
That's right.
And so I know now that he's healthy and I'm still struggling, I now know, oh, that's my addiction talking to me.
That's me.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. And so one of the keys in this process, in this healing process for you, has been this spiritual, you know, we can call it a spiritual awakening, or we can call it, you know, a spiritual process, right? But this is not a, there is therapy involved that's like super duper important. And I think that we can recommend that people find therapists. You know, we talk all the time on the podcast and in my groups about, you know, how to find a good therapist. And we're looking for advanced training in these things. And so one of the things that you recommend is to find someone who's actually been trained by the Meadows,
yeah.
Which, just full disclosure, I've talked on the podcast a lot about how I've mentioned it a few times when was it? It was March of last year, the end of March of this year, 2021, when I was staring into the void and was in a frozen trauma response myself because of some stuff that had happened in my life. I called Lindsay and I was like, where do I go?
Right.
And so she sent me to the Meadows, and that's where I went. I didn't go for the full 6 weeks. I wish I could have, but it wasn't feasible financially or logistically. And also I would love to have, I really would. But Lindsay did tell me there is a week-long program that she found to be the most sort of profound in her 6 weeks there. And so I was like, I'll go do that. Mm-hmm. So I fucking all the gratitude in the world, because it really was life-changing. It truly was. So finding someone who is trained by the Meadows is probably, I would say, one of the top things to look for, because the level of understanding of the psychiatric sort of process, especially around codependency, is fucking profound.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No-Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
The other part of this, which is also part of the process at the Meadows, by the way, like it's not separate, right? Is right. This spiritual process, which is mm-hmm. what you've written this new book sort of yeah. about. So before we get into that, let's talk about the spiritual process and like, why does it matter? And like, yeah, why does it matter?
Why does it matter? Exactly. Because, you know, the Meadows is rehab, mm-hmm. if you mm-hmm. will. And people go there for all kinds of things, right? So it's not obviously drugs and alcohol, but eating disorders, mm-hmm. workaholism, anything where we're doing too much of excessive things that's harming us, they see as an addiction. So there are 12 steps out there. And I had no idea there was 12 steps for all kinds. There's depression, there's CODA, there's
CODA, which is Codependence Anonymous, just for...
Mm-hmm. There's SLAW, Sex and Love Addiction Anonymous. I mean, there's all kinds of... There's stuff for workaholism. There's stuff for eating disorder. So the 12-step program doesn't matter what you're addicted to. It's pretty much the same process. It's the same steps, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I don't have the steps in front of me, but I believe the first one is admitting that you have a problem. And the second one is handing it over to a higher power, a power greater than yourself.
Yeah, right? No. I mean, yes, the first one is admitted to ourselves and to others that there is a problem. The second one is came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, right? And then the third step is actually handing it over, right? So there's a whole step to actually coming to the realization that if your life has become unmanageable, which is part of the first step, that if your life has become unmanageable, that the only way that you can be restored to sanity is by giving it over to a higher power. And it's not even asking you to do it yet. So, which is great, yeah. right? There are like three yeah. steps in the 12 steps that are about becoming willing before yeah. even taking the action, right? It's about sort yeah. of getting to that stage of being like, okay, I could see that perhaps the way that I've been doing this isn't right. It isn't working. Right.
And at the Meadows, you have to attend meetings mm-hmm. every day. You get to choose which one. There was one, you know, for every situation, you could do whichever you want. And I think I have been so burned by God yes. and religion. And I've seen what it's done to this country. Mm-hmm. I see, you know, religion, the most wars are for over some. So I've been very anti G word.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. And so the 12 step program is all God, 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 or higher power, you know? And so I at least probably walked out of the Meadows having done what steps one and two. Mm-hmm. And then I was just like, yeah, I'm not into this whole God thing. So I and then of course they encourage you to go into meetings. And I was like, no, fuck this. I've done enough. Right. And then I recognized how I was going through such withdrawal and I was in so much pain. I was like, I opened up the big book of AA. Mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm. And I started to, let me understand this God thing. What is this higher power? And I really saw very, very clearly that I have been making men my higher power my entire fucking life.
Entire fucking life. Entire really? Fucking life. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think of every boyfriend I had, high school, middle school, college, where the minute they come into my life, nothing else mattered.
Right.
And so I just saw, or I have to break the cycle. Mm-hmm. So that coming into finding in higher power, the pain was so unimaginable. Yeah. Where it, I was, again, the word insanity. I love the words 12 step uses about insanity, because you're, it's not that you are insane. Your life is insane. Right. Things are out of control. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And so what I found that the 12 steps in any of the big books was really missing was this spiritual healing of over a broken heart. Mm. I didn't find that anywhere.
Okay.
And I wanted a connection or a conversation with my higher self, mm-hmm. because I was literally praying to God, please remove this pain from me. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to mm-hmm. do. And when I started doing that, I started to see a huge change quickly, where I would wake up, I would pray, and I would think that God's not listening or whatever. And then suddenly I'd wake up and I'm like, I don't feel so bad today. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, well, you know, maybe there's some value to this prayer.
Right.
And I started to really, instead of waking up crying, I would then pray about something. I would scan, and it kind of became my process of just, what's bothering me? And I would just basically hand it over yeah. to my higher power. Uh-huh. And I want to say too, is I really did around that time, January, February, I ended up really diving into a program, and I got a sponsor mm-hmm. who really helped me through the steps. So I did go through good. All of them. Yep. And it's wonderful. You don't have to pay a thing, right? So it's all community and service. But through that process, my relationship with my higher power, I had to find it. So I ended up just starting to ask a question and then breathe and hear some voice. What was it? Something.
Right.
I started to write down what I heard. And so then, and I would write it on my phone, mm-hmm. on my notes section on my iPhone. Mm-hmm. And then throughout the day, I would read it. Over and over and over. It was so comforting. And each one and each thing, I just kept having more unbelievable insights from this thing called my higher power. Mm-hmm. And that was around February when I really started writing it. And I'd say by April, I made the most amazing shift. I just started to get really, really, really happy. Mm-hmm. And I felt really, really good. And so there, I recognized that that is what helped me get over the pain. Yeah. And obviously through other work that I was doing.
Right.
But I don't think you can get over any grief or loss or heartbreak without this component. And I think, as a coach, I've been afraid to talk about mm-hmm. it mm-hmm. because of the G word.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But now I just think you have to incorporate it somehow.
Yeah. It's interesting. Cause I mean, I have different, God, this year it'll be, I think it's, in April, it'll be 23 years since I walked into my first Al-Anon meeting. So, and it was a fucking process, because I grew up in an intellectual household where I had no access to spirituality. You know, spirituality was anti-intellectual. I had no access to God other than as this, whatever, you know, certainly not benevolent, right? And so it took a long time for me to have a similar process of like, all right, you know, and my first sponsor gave me she gave me this amazing little wooden reindeer that you like, you know, when you push up the bottom and then he collapses, right? Cause it's on the strings. Mm-hmm. Cause I was like, I don't get it. I don't know. I don't know what to do with this higher power bullshit. Like, this is crazy. It makes no sense to me. And she's like, okay, here, this is your higher power. He sits on your desk. And I'm like, yeah. Okay. You know, and for a lot of people, they say the chairs in the room, that, you know, your chair is your higher power. That's it. That's all it has to be for today. And, you know, to have that grow in me over the year, it's grown in different ways over the years. And now I sort of utilize it in my coaching in different ways. Like I will say, you know, I'll have my clients do like full moon ceremonies, especially like I have a client moving out of her house tomorrow. The full moon is tonight. I'm like, great. This is a release. This is a letting go. And she was like, I didn't know you were so woo. And I was like, sometimes yes, right? And so I think that it can occur in different ways. And I think, yeah. And the beauty of the 12 steps is that they use 12-step programs use the word God but it is the God of your understanding. It doesn't matter if it's the father of Jesus or if it's a reindeer, a collapsible reindeer, if it works for you, if it's the idea, right, that there is something other, right? Mm-hmm. That our intellect is, you know, as they say, it's like, you know, the worst neighborhood, right? Like in our heads, it's like the, you know, it's a dark alley in there. You know, our intellect is what got us into this in the first place, right? So it's not going to be the thing that gets us out.
Right. And I say this, that, and this is how I kind of formed my writing, which ultimately became this book, Lessons of a Breakup. Mm-hmm. But I say that our ego is the chief operating officer of all things from the past.
Yes. I love the way you put that in
there. Okay. Mm-hmm. Our spirit, which I call God, but it's our creator. Our spirit is only right now. Mm-hmm. There is no such thing as yesterday, and there's no such thing as tomorrow. And so when you are really in this place of just being in the now, ego has nowhere to go, right? Yeah. And it'll try. And so ego is fear and spirit is love. Mm-hmm. And when I really started to just tap into that and just listen for something right now, it's almost a process of, well, ego has nothing to do. So then it is a place where spirit does come through. That higher self can be, you can hear a message or calm or love or a feeling or even seeing things in a way that is more in your higher power. Mm-hmm. And so when I was in that process was when all these little downloads, the messages that came to me, and I started writing them. And it's funny, I really never went, I wrote it for me. Mm-hmm. I did not write it. There was no intention of a book, but somewhere in one of my meditations around August or whatever, it was, now you have to share it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now you have to share it with someone. And so I ended up copying and pasting all these things into a Word document and started editing it. And I'm like, oh, I guess this could be a book. And I was reading this stuff and I couldn't believe, Kate, that it was me because it wasn't me.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the way I write it, it is so from a divine, a different place. Yeah. And that's where I really believe that we can all channel this divine thinking. We don't have to go to church or be baptized or like, it's in us.
Right. That's right.
And we can all channel it. So that's really what I started doing, and hence this piece of work.
So let's talk about it. So it's called Lessons of a Breakup. So it's a blessing. So it's the
a lesson and a blessing.
Right. I love the title. I love it. So this book is these downloads. There are 50 blessings, right? And you start with the ego. Right. You really start with sort of excavating what the ego is.
Yeah.
And how it traps us but you talk about like the innocence of the beginning stages of ego, which is this purity of self, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I say that when we're born, we're our most divine selves. We are perfect. If you ever look at a baby, whether it's yours or someone else's, you can't stop looking at this creature of just mystery and divine. And then we really start to pick up that ego around 18 months, 2 years old. And then we're seeing our parents fight or something's happening. And then we start programming. You know, fear.
Yep.
So the whole point is to find a way to return back to the innocence and going what I call home. It's going home. Mm-hmm. We don't need to become a different person. All we have to do is go back to where we came from. And it seems like a lot less work when you think about it that way, right?
Yeah, that's right. It's a stripping away, not a piling on.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. And I felt as though the blessings are for someone who is going through an acute pain right now over a breakup. It doesn't mean you don't have to be, because there's so much other goodness in there. Mm-hmm. But that is what I needed to get through the day so that I can be focused, so I don't go and get triggered by a really negative thought and have my day ruined. So I started writing those in the morning, and then I would remember them throughout the day. So that's kind of where I decided to just, you know, I created the book. It's just an ebook right now. I don't have it on Amazon just yet. It'll get there. I wanted to just, I felt so hurried and I got to get this out now. Mm-hmm. So I ended up just creating an opt-in on my site. So you can get it for free. You don't even have to purchase the book. And if you opt into my site and to the blessings, it's right up at the top. You will get one every day for the next 50 days in between, you know, messages just from Lindsay Coach of like, hey, how you doing? Right. Because yeah. one is like the divine self. And then it's like one is Coach Lindsay. Right.
Yeah. Right.
And I was actually really terrified, truthfully, to put that out there because I'm thinking people are going to think I'm such some holy roller, like born again. I'm woke, you know, but I think we all have a curiosity about spirituality, whether we want to admit it or not. Mm-hmm. And we're all looking for some connection just between me and me, right? You and you.
Yes. I mean, and I think this is what accounts for, you know, all the religion in the world, right? We are inherently seekers. We feel this connection. We feel something. We don't know what it is. It's hard to name it. It's elusive by design. And there's a power in surrendering to it, mm-hmm. And receiving the blessings, if you will, that it has for all of us. And I think that, you know, I think the beauty of your book is that I think it appeals to people who are religious, who have a very strong connection to God, and, you know, have a very specific relationship with that, right? Because it really speaks right. that language. And I think, you know, you invite in the introduction, and I want to invite people as well to who don't, maybe don't, to see beyond the word God, right? As is sort of invited in 12-step programs and everything, right? So like, just like, it's of whatever it is for you.
Yeah. Right? Whatever it is for you.
Right.
Yeah.
It's if that's,
and you know. I say this in my introduction, I used to say mm-hmm. universe because right. I'm yes. a huge believer of universal energy, and there is a loving energy out there that supports us. What I felt as though by saying universe, it was outside of me right. and that sometimes I couldn't see it or touch it, where I really started to think that God is in me. It's in all of us, our that's creator, right. our, mm-hmm. our spirit. And, mm-hmm. and so to me that felt more personal. That's and right. then I have the power to channel that voice at any moment. And I do say it, you know, definitely use a different word at the end of the day. It just gets a different lens of getting you outside of your ego thoughts for about 5 minutes a day.
It's so important, guys. Our, you know, our, like we say, our best thinking got us here. It ain't going to get us out.
So. It's so true. And I think that, again, whether, you know, we started this off with love addiction, mm-hmm. and so much of, if we, I mean, it's really simple. You can label yourself love addict or love avoidant all you want. At the end of the day, if you're getting out of a really crappy toxic relationship and you're heartbroken and not saying, thank God that guy's gone, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You are in withdrawal. You have a distorted sense of that relationship. And so that is an addiction, addictive thinking.
That's right.
And so in order to get out of the addictive thinking, we have to create a daily practice of something outside of that heartbreak. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I really hope to help people with these lessons.
I love it. Lindsay, thank you so much. And these are on your website, which is lindsayellison.com.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep. And it's the right at the header, sign up. And I also want to point out, there's two versions. One is for the love interest of women and the love interest of men. Hmm. So, and I did not want to create a gender neutral because to me, I needed a pronoun in there, you know, okay. because how you love a he is can be different than how you love a she. So that's mm-hmm. why I created two different ones. So it'll ask you which love interest you have and you'll get that.
Great. I love it. Thank you so much, Lindsay. It's
Thanks
always
for having me.
Such a pleasure and such an honor to have these conversations with you. You have been a, God knows, a lifesaver and guiding force in my life. So
I love it. I actually had a joke with my boyfriend. I said, you know what? I think I help people because I have had such a fucked up life. So
Right. Your trauma. Yeah, you like, you know, your trauma that landed you in a treatment center
helped me find my way to the treatment center. So it's great. And now we just pass it on to other people. It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so that's how we become healers and teachers I figured out how to solve this problem and I want to teach others to do it so they don't suffer as much. That's the whole reason why we're in this business.
That's right. Amen, sister.
Thanks, Kate.
Thanks, Lindsay.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Divorce Survival Guide podcast. If you like what you hear, head on over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen in and leave me a review. And don't forget to follow me on Instagram at The Divorce Survival Guide. I'll see you next time. And until then, remember, you, my love, deserve to be happy.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tiny humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.